Now that we have survived the dramas of Christmas and the fireworks of the new year, but have not yet settled down into the groove of our ordinary day-to-day life, now is a good time to have a look at the rules and beliefs that govern our day-to-day lives. Have a look at the things that you live by. What are your rules? What are your beliefs? Are they all rational? Probably not, but that doesn't matter. Rationality is not essential, but are they useful? Are the things you believe in helping your life, nourishing your life, building community, or are they just causing trouble? This endeavour is very important, I think, because Christian congregations, and also congregations like this one that have their roots in Christianity, are fading and failing. Because the beliefs and the wisdom that they propose are increasingly irrelevant and no longer reach the souls of seekers after the divine. When I'm feeling particularly grouchy and at war with the world, I divide the Christian wisdom and the Christian tenets into two untidy heaps. On the one hand, there's all the stuff that I never do anyway, so there's no point in telling me to do it or not to do it, it's irrelevant. And on the other hand, there's all the stuff that I will do anyway, and no amount of encouragement or discouragement seems to affect it. In the heap of stuff that I don't go near are things like the rule, keep holy the Sabbath. I mean, what does that actually mean? About 10 years ago, when I was engaging with this idea and thinking that maybe a Sabbath is a good idea, I arbitrarily nominated Wednesday as the Sabbath because that's a day that works for me. I mean, the Old Testament says that the Sabbath is the seventh day of the week, which if you count Sunday as day one, it's Saturday. There are so many days that you could pick. So if you're going to nominate a Sabbath, why not pick one that works with your lifestyle? Now, as I say, that's all in the heap, that's all in the bin side of the equation. In the bin side of the equation, too, are the rules about coveting. I don't covet. I mean, I don't want my neighbour's wife. And I'll talk to the neighbours and my neighbours' wives and are friendly people. And if I want any advice or help or encouragement from them, I just have to ask. I don't have to actually steal the woman and bring her home. It's the same thing with coveting donkeys. I mean, I live in the city. None of my neighbours have donkeys. So the question just does not arise. There are umpteen other examples of this kind of thing, but I think you get the picture. On the other side of the equation are the things that are frowned upon, but I do anyway. Into that bracket, I would put the things like do not lie. I mean, come on, seriously? We are all a bit, we all bend the truth from time to time, and we make allowances and accommodations, and the fact that somebody, God or his representative, said don't lie, I'm sorry, it just really doesn't affect me that much. Into that same bracket too comes more seriously the one, do not kill. Now, clearly I'm not a murderer. I wouldn't be here if that was the case, not directly. But here in the Western world, we kill in a much more insidious way. Every time you turn on the television and see pictures of destroyed buildings and wrecked hospitals, the ordinance that destroyed that came from the Western world. Arms dealing is our dirty little secret, and we are all of us complicit in this, even though I can put my hands up and say I didn't kill anyone. But the blood is nonetheless on my hands because I live in a society that supports the arms industry. And if that wasn't bad enough, the European Union is one of the biggest producers of toxic agricultural chemicals. So what we don't kill with our bullets, we're spraying to death. So killing is something that I have a responsibility for. I'm not sure how I can avoid this, but or how I can get away from it, wipe the slate clean, but killing is part of what I do. Now, let's turn to Judge Not. This is the one that got up my nose some time ago, because I have a friend who said to me, he hopes the next generation will grow up compassionate and non-judgmental. And I thought, hold on a minute now. Judgment is a very important part of what we do. If we rear a generation of kids who can't judge, can't make decisions, can't pick, can't even decide what's right and wrong, they won't be fit to leave the house. In fact, they won't be fit to stay in the house either. They'll have to have somebody looking after them 24 hours a day. So I thought, this is one of the sayings of Jesus. Clearly I have missed something here. I'll have to investigate this a bit farther. So I got out my Bible, my wonderful interlinear Greek and English New Testament. Judge not, let ye be judged, comes from the first verse of chapter 7 of Matthew's Gospel. So I thought, I wonder, what does it say in Greek? Now, I don't know a lot of ancient Greek, but I decided anyway. Let's just go and have a look. Like, clearly, when judge not is a silly idea to me, but this is handed down tradition. I must have missed something, so let's have a look. Now, let me see. Oh, yeah. What judge not, according to the Greek, comes from me crinite. Crinite is a standard imperative. It's an instruction. The me bit is, negates it. So this judge not is a really good translation to that. But then I thought, this Greek verb, maybe it has been badly translated. So then I spent a very happy hour searching for the Greek, ancient Greek English dictionary. There is definitely one in my house, but after an hour of searching, I couldn't find it. So I was still puzzled about this. So I searched around again, and I came across a Teach Yourself Ancient Greek. This was an idea that I had years ago. I haven't read beyond the first chapter, but maybe. I can't put the book in the bin either, because maybe in some time I will actually start learning ancient Greek. But at the back of this book, there's a glossary. They give the words. So, krino was given. So I said, great, what does it actually mean? According to the glossary in the back of Teach Yourself Ancient Greek, the word krino means to judge, to decide, to select, or to choose. That's even worse. If you say to somebody, don't judge, you can make some excuse for saying to somebody, don't judge. But if you say, don't choose, don't decide, don't select, how are you going to survive in the world if you don't do that? My suspicion with this, judge not, lest ye be judged, is that this was put in because the powers that be wanted people like you and me to listen to them, not to make up our minds ourselves. This was, I think the idea behind this was that it blocks us from making choices about things. We should listen to our betters, people who are better educated, who really know ancient Greek. They'll be able to tell us what we need to know. And that's not an idea that's going to wash in the world today. Now, there are problems in the world today, and there are situations where judge not is a useful approach, especially when it comes to social media. There are a lot of very abusive posts out there, and a lot of people are damaged by what's posted on social media. But the people who make these posts, I don't think they're going to be touched or impressed if I say, oi, don't judge. That's not the solution. Enough about judge not. I think you could take the same broom to that tenet of Christianity. You know, the one where Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. That is a good idea, but I don't think it's good. It's it's enough for the world we live in. I mean, I would argue that God today doesn't need to be loved. We would make a far better impression on the world if we respected creation. Don't kill the spider. Don't stamp on the ant. Appreciate the things that God has given us. And don't destroy people or things that we consider to be inconvenient or just don't like. And then as for loving our neighbour, I don't think our neighbour needs to be loved. I mean, we're living in the city, for heaven's sake. Our neighbour should be treated with respect and should be left to get on with his life in peace. When I hear this, love your neighbour as yourself, I think of my neighbour. I have a neighbour. He's a mad individual, but he's a whole lot of fun. But the reason I know him is because he has a dog. And my dog and his dog don't like one another, but we get on fine, the owners of the dog. And he was telling me he's not getting on with his neighbour. And I said, oh dear, what's wrong? He said, well, he said, I play my electric guitar at night and he doesn't like it. So I think you could stop playing your electric guitar at night rather than loving the neighbour. This would make far more, would bring far more peace and harmony into the world. And the neighbour, though, does not sit there quietly while this noise is made. He has acquired a silent dog whistle. So we have two houses side by side. One plays the electric guitar at night and the other drives the dog nuts. I think you could treat your neighbor well without actually loving him. Just have a little bit of concern. We don't need to go as far as love. So now that I have taken a broom to some of the great wisdom of the Christian tradition, I can't very well leave you here with nothing. Where do we go for wisdom that will help us today? Something that we can use to guide our lives, to help us so that we're not loving our neighbor or we're not loving God, but we show respect to creation and we live in some state, I don't like to say armed truce, but so that we can live in some kind of accommodation with our neighbours. I think we have a lot to learn from Jordan Peterson. Aidan last week introduced us to Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. He's not necessarily the only guide out there. I mean, there are more thinkers out there, but Jordan Peterson has a lot to say that touches the spot. One of the problems, I think, with the sort of passive way religion has gone is that we sit at home and we are bombarded by negative messages on television. And we have our neighbor playing the electric guitar in the middle of the night and life is miserable and we have an orange-yellow warning so we can't go out. And life becomes very unpleasant and we sit there imagining that there's nothing we can do, that we just have to sit in misery and that we have no agency ourselves. This is where Jordan Peterson comes in. He looks at the world and he says things like, when I was ironing one day recently, he was saying, don't lie. And then he looked I felt he was looking at me out of the screen and my monitor and he said, but somebody as stupid as you, how do you know whether something is true or not? Just stop saying things you know to be not true. The same way, in his 12 Rules for Life, he says, Rule 6, set your house in perfect order before criticizing the world. This gives you a task, so you can't complain about the world until you have made an effort to make even one corner of it satisfactory. Then he says, Rule 7, pursue what is meaningful, not what is expedient. Again, a useful guide to living our lives. Now, Jordan Peterson is not a romantic. He's a conservative, but he's clear-sighted. He accepts that the world is a tough place. He has written, life is very hard. Everyone is destined for pain and slated for destruction. But at the same time, life is a wonderful gift. We need to use our lives. We need to not sit at home depressed and miserable. Just because the old answers don't work anymore doesn't mean we quite put them in the bin. We put them on the shelf of the hard things. We put it up there beside the teach yourself ancient Greek and teach yourself everything else that someday you will get to, and someday maybe we'll get back to them. But in the meantime, we have to live our lives with as much hope, with as much vigor, with as much enthusiasm as we can manage. I am going to close with a piece written by Dorothy Day. Dorothy Day was a wonderful woman. She set up the Catholic worker movement, and the whole Catholic Church, the powers that be, don't know what to make of her because she was a misfit. She did wonderful work, but she's clearly never going to be a saint. Her private life was too far from sainthood, shall we say. But the words of Dorothy Day: people say, what is the sense of our small effort? They cannot see that we must lay one brick at a time, take one step at a time. A pebble cast into a pond causes ripples that spread in all directions. Each one of our thoughts, words, and deeds is like that. No one has a right to sit down and feel hopeless. There's too much work to do. Amen.